Hello, it's Deb back on a Wednesday. Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. Starting with the Decatur Papers with the Herald and Review. Education. Richland continues dealing with state budget fallouts. This is by Chris Lisvardi, who, as you probably remember, is an H&R staff writer. Decatur. The Richland Community College Board of Trustees approved Tuesday the transfer from working cash funds of up to $2.155 million in an effort to cover the school's expenses in the spring. The transfer has become necessary as the college awaits a resolution to the state budget impasse, said Greg Florian, Richland's Vice President of Finance and Administration. The amount is an estimate of what is currently expected to be necessary to maintain operations, he said. The transfer will be made to the educational purposes and operations and maintenance purpose funds, Florian said. We still have half a year to see what happens, Florian said. We continue to monitor what is going on with the state. The working cash funds will be used to cover necessary and ordinary expenses starting in January and continuing through the spring, Florian said. The money that is used will need to be repaid, he said. The exact amount of what is needed will be determined largely by how soon lawmakers can agree on a state budget and what spring enrollment ends up being, Florian said. He said Richland has approximately $5.3 million in its working cash funds as of November, which would leave about $3.3 million after the transfers. The college is trying to make up for not receiving $2.5 million from the state. We're hopeful things are starting to move in Springfield. Florian said cash flow needs will be analyzed monthly to minimize the amount of funds transferred. Additional transfers could become necessary closer to the end of the fiscal year, he said. Florian said higher enrollment could help the college exceed the $893,000 that has projected from tuition that still needs to be collected this fiscal year, which ends in June. The college has been making adjustments to prepare for the lack of state funds. It announced plans in November to discontinue its adult education program at the end of the year, but President Gail Saunders said a smaller version of the program is still possible. The college anticipates receiving the federal portion of funding for the adult education program by the end of next week, Saunders said. The state match still has not been released. We are working to finalize decisions on how to provide that program, Saunders said. As we receive more funding, we'll continue to bring it back to the levels it's been. The college is still looking at dealing with the fallout from the state budget impasse through most of next year. Florian said it would be at least next December by the time the state makes whole on all its payments, depending on how soon a budget is approved. Richland is not anticipating receiving 100% of the state funding that was identified in this year's budget, Florian said. At the end of the day, we just have no idea. We have no precedents to determine, once there's a state budget, what it means. We have no answer. The college is already planning to not automatically fill open staff positions as it makes cuts in an effort to end the fiscal year without going into debt, Florian said. In other business, the board approved a contract with the Association of Community College Trustees Executive Search Services to provide consulting services as it looks to hire a new president. Saunders is planning to retire in the spring. The board met in closed session Monday to discuss the search. Chairman Bruce Campbell said the board met in closed session to discuss the search. The meeting was positive but lengthy, he said. It gave direction to the process, he said. We're working hard on the process. Replacing Saunders will be a tough challenge, Campbell said. The contract is effective from today through July 1st or until a new president is in place. The board plans to meet again January 11th in closed session to discuss the search process. End of that article. Next, by Justin Kahn, from the staff, local. Part-time job becomes 30-year career for CHELP's Diane Drew, C-H-E-L-P, an acronym. Decatur. Diane Drew knew something wasn't quite right when she saw Bob Thiemann walk into the Community Home Environmental Learning Project, CHELP, building during the annual home care staff Christmas party on Tuesday. Thiemann, the Illinois Association of Community Care Program Home Care Providers Executive Director, wouldn't normally be at the staff party. "I started thinking, something's fishy here," Drew said. But Drew wasn't sure what was going on until CHELP Board President Jim Livesey handed Drew a card and told her they'd decided to add to the Christmas party an anniversary party celebrating her 30 years as CHELP Executive Director. Drew's mouth dropped open. Then she let out a big laugh. After opening the card, which contained a check for $2,000, Drew said, "As much as I rant and rave, I love this place." Livesey said, "We're hoping for another 30 years. Drew said she hadn't expected to work at CHELP, a state-funded organization that helps keep seniors and the disabled in their homes, more than a few months when she started part-time on November 5, 1985. "I was going to Richland in my early 30s and was studying accounting, and one day I'm walking down the hill and my accounting teacher stops me and says, 'I have a job for you,' Drew said. I said, 'I don't want a job. I'm a student.'" Drew's job at CHELP started out as a part-time bookkeeper for 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. 6 months later, the part-time billing person retired, and the director at the time combined that position with Drew's to make one full-time position. "She took 2 5-hour-a-day jobs and made them into an 8-hour job," Drew said, laughing. "At the time, I thought I'd be here a few months, get some experience, and go to work for one of the big corporations and make the big bucks." Instead, Drew stayed. "I've done every job in this place," she said. By the time she became director in 1999, she knew she wasn't going anywhere. "It was feeling I got helping people," Drew said. "I just love this work, and that really surprised me. I never would have thought that would be the type of work I'd want to do. I was going to make big dollars, but social service work is all about helping people, and I didn't realize that about myself until I started doing it. I knew by the time I became director that I'd be here until they carried me out." In 2012, Drew was the winner of the Charles D. Johnson Leader of Excellence Award, given annually by the Illinois Department of Aging. Livesey said he often wonders, if Drew wasn't at CHELP, who would be able to handle the responsibility? "She runs this place from start to finish," said Livesey, who has been the CHELP board president for more than 15 years. "This is her show, and she's done a great job for years and years." Livesey said Drew mentioned the 30th anniversary at a board meeting, and the board decided they would surprise her with the vacation, the $2,000, and flowers at the Christmas party. Drew said she had no clue about the surprise, which her husband Steve had helped facilitate. "I had no idea," Drew said. "My husband did a good job hiding it. I don't do this well. I prefer to be the one doing the thinking, but this means a lot." End of the article. We're not talking about isolation. We're talking about security, he said. "We're not talking about religion. We're talking about security." Bush dismissed the proposal as unserious, saying, "Donald's great at the one-liners, but he's chaos candidate, and he'll be a chaos president." And he'd be a chaos president. In contrast, Cruz and Rubio said they understood why Trump had raised the idea of banning Muslims and avoided directly criticizing the front runner. Instead, they focused on each other, engaging in lengthy debates over their differences on national security and immigration, one of the most contentious issues in the Republican primary. Rubio defended his support for eventually providing a pathway to citizenship for some people in the U.S. illegally, an unpopular position within the Republican Party. Rubio was the co-author of comprehensive Senate legislation in 2013 that would have created that pathway, but he has since said the nation's immigration crisis must be addressed in piecemeal fashion, with legalization only an option after the U.S.-Mexico border is secured. Cruz went further than he has previously in opposing legislation for people in the U.S. illegally, declaring, "I have never supported legalization, and I do not intend to support legalization." The two senators Both Cuban Americans in their 40s have been sparring from afar for weeks. The Texas senator is on the rise, particularly in Iowa's kickoff caucuses, and is casting himself as a more electable alternative to Trump. While Rubio is seeking to straddle the divide between his party's establishment and more conservative wings. Rubio positioned himself as the hawk on national security, defending American efforts to oust dictators like Syria's Bashar Assad from the Middle East. He also accused Cruz of weakening the government's ability to track terrorists because he voted in favor of legislation to eliminate the NSA's bulk phone records collection program and replace it with a more restrictive effort to keep the records in phone companies' hands. We are now at a time when we need more tools, not less tools, Rubio said. And that tool we lost, the metadata program, was a valuable tool that we no longer have at our disposal. Cruz argued that his vote helped, quote, reform how we target bad guys, unquote, by allowing the government to search more phone numbers. Marco knows what he's saying isn't true, he said. What he knows is that the old program covered 20 to 30% of phone numbers to search for terrorists. The new program covers nearly 100%. Beginning after September 11, 2001 terror attacks, the NSA secretly collected the daily calling records, but not contents of conversations for most Americans, including people never suspected of any crime. A new law called the USA Freedom Act passed in June with broad bipartisan support. It ordered the NSA to end bulk collection after a 6-month transition that expired last week. The senators also displayed differences in their strategies for targeting the Islamic State. The extremist group claimed responsibility for the November 13 attack in Paris, and one of the shooters in California pledged allegiance to the group on Facebook shortly before she and her husband shot and killed 14 people at a holiday party. Cruz called for using, quote, overwhelming air power, unquote, to destroy the Islamic State. Well, Rubio said airstrikes would have to be supplemented by ground troops, including American Special Operation Forces. President Obama has largely relied on airstrikes to target the militants in Iraq and Syria. However, he's also sent troops to Iraq to help train and assist local forces, and recently approved sending special operation forces into Syria. New Jersey Senator Chris Christie, who has been on the rise in New Hampshire, sought to assert himself in the national security discussions. He called for a no-fly zone over Syria and had vowed to shoot down a Russian plane if it were to violate that space. Not only would I be prepared to do it, I would do it, he said. We would shoot down the planes of Russian pilots if, in fact, they were stupid enough to think that this president was the same feckless weakling that the president we have in the Oval Office is right now. The debate's focus on national security was a detriment for retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson, who has struggled on complex international matters. He punted on questions about surveillance and his own qualifications for being commander-in-chief. Also on the main stage Tuesday night was former business executive Carly Fiorina, Ohio Governor John Kasich, and Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. Four lower polling candidates appeared at an earlier event, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, former New York Governor George Pataki, and South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. End of the article. Finishing the front page of the Herald and Review, lifestyles. High school graduation rate up to 82% DEC. Washington AP. This is by Jennifer Kerr from AP. The nation's high school graduation rate has ticked up slightly to 82%, a new high. The Education Department said Tuesday that the rate for the 2013-14 school year, up from 81% the previous year, was the highest since it started using a new uniform measure in 2010. Still, the numbers show nearly 1 in 5 students leaving high school without a diploma. Education Secretary Arnie Duncan said too many students still aren't graduating, but he praised the newly released numbers as encouraging. America's students have achieved another record milestone by improving graduation rates for a fourth year, Duncan said in a statement. We can take pride as a nation in knowing that we're seeing promising gains, including for students of color. Data showed that 86% of Illinois students graduate from high school. That's the 20th highest graduation rate in the country. Okay, let's start over again here. Data show that 86% of Illinois students graduate from high school. That's the 20th highest graduation rate in the country. In Illinois, 90.1% of white students graduate. The numbers are 77.2% for black students and 81.3% for Hispanic students. The national data shows that the black and Hispanic students made some progress in closing the achievement gap with their white counterparts. About 72% of black students and 76% of Hispanic students earned diplomas in 13-14. For white students, the rate was 87%. English language learners and students with disabilities had the lowest graduation rates at 62% and 63%, respectively. The largest numbers, though, drew concern from groups advocating for a 90% graduation. The latest numbers, though, drew concern from groups advocating for a 90% graduation rate in the coming years. To reach that 90% mark, the rate needed to increase each year by at least 1.3%, something it missed for 13-14. For the first time in 4 years, the country is not on track to reach the national goal of a 90% on-time high school graduation rate by 2020, missing by just a few tenths of a percent, said a statement from the four organizations leading the Grad Nation campaign, the Alliance for Excellent Education, America's Promise Alliance, Civic Enterprises, and the Everyone Graduates Center at Johns Hopkins University School of Education. The last leg of this campaign will be very challenging, and we must redouble our efforts to reach that goal, our goal. Across the country, Iowa had the highest graduation rate at 90%. The District of Columbia had the lowest with a 61% graduation rate. The graduation rate is calculated by using a formula in which the number of graduates in a given year is divided by the number of students who enrolled 4 years earlier. In 2008, the Bush administration ordered all states to begin using this method, moving to a calculation that required them to track each student individually, giving a more accurate count of how many actually finish high school. End of the article. On to local. Education. Mount Zion approves nominal property tax increase. This is by Ryan Voiles, H&R staff writer. Mount Zion's residents of Mount Zion can expect a slightly higher property tax from the school district. The Mount Zion School Board approved a plan at Tuesday night's meeting to levy $10,303,720 for the upcoming fiscal year, which would be a 3.3% increase from this year's levy. Increases come from a rise in the municipal retirement levy, which is at $340,000, tort fund levy, which is at $590,000. With the increased tax levy and an estimated increase in the area's equalized assessed value, Assistant Superintendent Brian Rhodes said the projected increase in property taxes for residents would likely be several cents for the owner of an average home. Officials had said before the levy is intended to tap the increasing equalized assessed value, EAV. Assistant Superintendent Brian, let's start over again on this paragraph. Officials said that before that levy is intended, said before, this levy is intended to tap the increasing EAV in the Mount Zion area, which includes new and remodeled houses and new businesses that bring in additional dollars that can be collected through levying. There had been discussion among government and governing bodies during tax levy season about whether to make significant increases to tax levies in light of the possibility that the Illinois General Assembly would pass a plan to freeze local property taxes for at least 2 years. Rhodes said previously that administrators are aware of the situation in the General Assembly, but this levy is based on projected equalized assessed value of the area and projected needs for the next school year. In other business, the school board unanimously approved the high school course planning handbook for the next year that will change several classes. Among the courses that will be dropped next fall are two audiovisual production courses and three levels of German language class. Superintendent Travis Roundcount said the classes were a victim of low enrollment, though noted an AV club will continue. The humanities and Illinois history courses will also be dropped due to teacher retirements. Courses that will be added for the fall include horticulture and general science courses. End of that article. Continuing in education section, Millikan Brass Quintet makes pitch to Garfield students. This is by Valerie Wells. Again, Decatur. When Gary Shaw was in fifth grade and wanted to learn to play an instrument, the school sent home a list of choices and how much rent was for each one. My mother looked at the list and saw that trombone cost less than the saxophone I wanted to play, and that's how I decided what I was going to do for the rest of my life, Shaw said on Tuesday at Garfield Montessori School. The Millikan Brass Quintet, consisting of Shaw, trumpeters Neil Smith and Randall Raymond, Steve Shepper on horn, and Mark Moore on tuba, performed for students in Decatur schools on Tuesday, thanks to the Symphony Guild of Decatur. The hope is that by showing students what accomplished instrumentalists can do on various instruments, more kids will want to try. A number of Garfield students already participate in band, orchestra, or choir, said Principal Mary Anderson, which surprised the quintet. When Smith asked for a show of hands by all the student musicians, almost all of them went up. Wow, Smith said, that's a lot of you. The five musicians, good friends as well as colleagues who teach at Millikan University and play together in the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra, each talked about the qualities of their own instrument and demonstrated a bit of what it could do. Shaw explained the instruments are made of brass because it's a soft metal suited to the twists and turns required to make a trumpet or horn. Shepard joked that his instrument, commonly known as the French horn, is not French at all, but German, and most musicians just say horn. One of those is Shylin Page, a fifth grader and a trumpet player who sat in the front row and pretended to conduct as the quintet played. His older brother plays trumpet too, he said, and plays in a marching band, something Shylin would like to do sometime. I just like the way the trumpet sounds, he said. Naveena Madharrison, a sixth grader who's been playing trombone for a year, said that it's more fun now that her arms are longer. Last year, she had trouble reaching far enough with the slide to hit all the notes, and she's an all-around musician. I've been liking music since I was little, like 3 or 4, she said. I played the violin in the orchestra and sang in the chorus, too. End of the article by Valerie Wells. Continuing with local, we have Crime in Court, Strong Arm Robbery Suspect Jailed. This is by Tony Reed, an H&R staff writer, Decatur. A Decatur man allegedly involved in a strong-arm robbery was caught and arrested by police Monday night. Chaz H. Campbell, 20, was jailed on a charge of robbery for allegedly accosting a student October 9th and stealing his cell phone valued at $300. Campbell is accused of taking part in the daylight robbery with a partner, Darian A. Page, 18, who was caught earlier and pleaded guilty to robbery in a court appearance, November 6th. He was sentenced to 24 months probation, ordered to pay costs and make restitution of $300 for the stolen phone. Sworn police statements in the case of Campbell accuse him of approaching the victim with Page as the victim stood in front of a house in the 1400 block of East Johns Avenue. The victim told police Page ordered him to empty his pockets, which he did not do. He indicated that he did not comply with Darian's when he did not comply with Darian's demand, Chaz grabbed his arms and forcibly removed his hands from his pant pockets. He stated that both Chaz and Darian then ordered him to keep his hands in the air as the robbers took his phone, a phone charger, and various school-related paperwork. Both robbers then fled on foot, with Campbell allegedly seen jumping into a parked car before speeding away. Police said a neighbor pulling into his driveway at the time of the robbery saw the victim with his hands in the air as two men went through his pockets. Campbell remained jailed Tuesday night in lieu of posting $40,000 bond. If he makes bail, he is ordered to stay away from the alleged victim and the victim's home. End of that article. Rail. Okay, here's a group of shorts. Winter Break Camp, Decatur Park District's winter break camp for children aged 5 to 13 will offer games, arts, and crafts, specially planned activities, and daily field trips while school is not in session. The camp will be open from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. December 21st to 23rd, 28th to 30th, and January 4th. The daily fee is $37, $32 with a resident discount, with a 15% discount for each additional sibling. Bring a sack lunch. Afternoon lunch snack will be provided. Register at least 48 hours in advance at the Park District. Again, Decatur. I guess these are all now. Most the next three are Decatur. East Main partial closure. The 2900 block of East Main Street at South 29th Street will be partially closed from 9 a.m. to about noon today. Okay, so that's history, weather permitting, to replace air eliminator valves. Who knew? Ronald McDonald Scholarship. Scholarship applications are being accepted for Ronald McDonald House Charities of Central Illinois. Applicants must be high school seniors, have a minimum of 2.7 grade point average, and demonstrate educational excellence and community involvement. There are 12 $2,000 scholarships available. The application deadline is Wednesday, January 20th. For more information, visit www.rmhc-centralillinois.org. Decatur. Drug possession arrest. Police arrested a Decatur woman for alleged possession of drug paraphernalia after a neighbor told patrol officers that drugs were being used in her home. Written reports stated the 40-year-old woman was taken into custody Thursday night at her house in the 1000 block of East Elmhurst Avenue. Sworn statements note police who searched the home found three hypodermic needles the woman reportedly said were used to inject heroin. She also allegedly admitted to using a clear glass smoking device to smoke methamphetamine. Booty. Protection order violation. A man from Booty who spoke to his estranged wife at church and then sat in front of her for the entire service Sunday was later arrested for violating an order of protection. The 43-year-old man was taken into custody just after 1 a.m. Tuesday and booked on a charge of violating the order by coming within 500 feet of his wife. He is normally only allowed to talk to her at counseling sessions or to discuss finances, visitation arrangements, or other matters relating to their children. Mattoon Arts Council Quilt Show. The Mattoon Arts Council is looking for entries for the Signs of Spring Quilt Show Saturday and Sunday, January 30th and 31st in the Lone Elm Room at the Mattoon Depot on Broadway Avenue. Quilts, wall hangings, table runners, and garments are eligible for exhibition. This is not a juried quilt show. All ages of quilters are accepted, and quilts must reflect the theme of Signs of Spring. For more information, visit Mattoon's Arts Council website, www.mattoonartscouncil.org. Contact Jamie Willis at jamiewillis50@gmail.com or call the Arts Council office at 258-6286, 258-6286. All entrants must submit an intent to exhibit form available on the website by Friday, January 1st. Space is limited. So that is the end of part one of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, December 16th. This is Debbie saying talk to you again here very soon.